ask you this. Let me ask you this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Sports Central. Chicago Sports Conversation with Adam Hogue.
Go.
This is Sports Central.
Go.
On demand and streaming live on WGNRadio.com.
Well, good afternoon. This is Sports Central. I'm Kevin Powell, sitting in for Adam Hogue, who is in Indianapolis covering the NFL Scouting Combine. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock. Appreciate you listening on WGNRadio.com. We'll also podcast the entire show after this. We'll get to Adam in a second in Indy with some of the latest on Bears stuff. We also talk with Steve Greenberg, who's covering the Big Ten Tournament out in New York. And then we'll wrap up the show with Chris Cook, Chicago Tribune White Sox beat reporter. Talk a little Cubs as well. It is Wednesday, February 28th. Finally, the final day of February. My current power rankings, Joe, of months, February might be last.
Yep.
Just not good. It's a teaser. You get a day where it's like 60, and then you blink, and there's a foot of snow on the ground.
A foot, yeah.
It's a total tease.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy February is over. Anyways, let's get to Adam Hogue, who is in Indianapolis. Adam, how you doing, man?
I'm good, yeah, and I would agree with that, especially from a sports radio standpoint. February, not so good.
Not great.
So,
it does start off with a bang with the Super Bowl, and then it kind of fades quickly, and then we get some spring training stuff, but not the best month in the world overall.
Yeah, well, at least we had the combine today here in Indianapolis, and actually a decent amount of Bears news coming from here this morning, which was at least made it a little bit more interesting than usual.
That's right. Well, of course, we get the Matt Forte news. He posts a tweet that retirement is retiring, Matt Forte. I don't know if you want to start there, and we can get to the Matt Nagy stuff in a second and Ryan Pace as well, but Matt Forte, pretty clearly the third best running back in Bears history. How would you characterize his career?
Yeah, I just think he's one of the more underrated players that's played the game. You go back and look at over the last 10 years who had the most yards from scrimmage in the entire league, and it's Matt Forte. And I think if you were to ask that as a trivia question, not many people outside of Chicago would get that answer. And probably even a lot of people in Chicago would not get that answer correctly. So, you know, that just shows you the production. I think he's, you know, in terms of durability and versatility, so reliable as a receiver on top of being a very good running back. He was a unique running back in this league, and that's a big reason why he was able to be as productive as he was. Now, what's interesting about it, and it kind of, I don't know that it diminishes his career in any way, but the Bears have done such a good job of replacing him since he left that, you know, it gives off this perception that he wasn't as important as he really was because he was so easy to replace. But I don't think that's really on him. I just think the Bears, you know, a lot of people getting on Ryan Pace. We talked about this yesterday about some of the wrong decisions he's made. But they moved on from an older running back at the right time. You don't want to do it too late. They did it at the right time. They quickly replaced him with multiple options and did a good job in doing so. So it shouldn't really take anything away from what Matt Forte did as a Bear for a really long time.
Yeah, and you saw his numbers drop off dramatically since he left Chicago. Really wasn't the same back in New York, and I think you can factor a lot of things into that, but I'm sure age played a role into that as well. Just a solid all-around running back, right? I mean, one of those guys, almost a 10,000, 5,000-yard guy, 10,000 rushing, 5,000-yard receiving. So a rock, didn't fumble the ball a whole lot, but overall a very strong running back. The other news pertaining to the modern Bears team as we move forward in the 2018 offseason. Willie Young, Mike Glennon, what's the latest there?
Yeah, so Mike Glennon, Willie Young officially cut right now. Mike Glennon will be cut and released on March 14th when the new league year happens. It just has something to do with his contract, and he's got a bunch of money that kicks in like a couple days after the league year. So obviously the timing works out, and Ryan Pace admitting that will happen today. So we talked to Ryan Pace, and we might as well play it now. We at least a small snippet of it, because a lot of different topics came up with Ryan Pace, including even before Mike Glennon, the situation with Kyle Fuller right now. He's potentially could be tagged. They haven't done it yet. I'm not sure they're going to. And if they doesn't, then he ends up going to the open market most likely. But I still think there's mutual interest there between the Bears and Kyle Fuller. But that was one of the topics that was addressed with Ryan Pace. We'll bring you a short snippet of what he had to say, just starting with what's going on with Kyle Fuller right now.
We're still evaluating that right now. Obviously, we like Kyle, and you know, he had a good season, and we're happy with the way he's progressed. But those are things that are on the table. We're just still evaluating that process. We have some time.
Last year, you didn't have the combine before the deadline. I think the deadline was before. What is the benefit of being around this? Does that help you better gauge what the market would do for Kyle?
No, I don't think so. I think the assessments we make on Kyle are internal, you know, and we've already gone through a lot of those evaluations. And now it's just communicating with his agent, you know, on the different avenues that we have right now.
Ryan, this first stretch of working with Matt, what has stood out to you about him and working together with him?
He's extremely passionate about this. The collaboration is very natural for us. He's highly intelligent, but he's also very, very humble with that, which I think is a real attractive trait.
When you said last month that he'd bring a fresh voice. How would you describe what his voice will be for this team?
You know, Matt's naturally a very energetic person. He's also kind of a very creative, outside-the-box thought process, which is nice.
What have you learned about what he looks for in players?
You know, just as we learn more and more about just his philosophy, especially on offense and what he wants to do, it's getting our scouts on the same page on that vision and what fits. But Matt's one of the attractive things about Matt also is his flexibility. So it's really, hey, this is what this player does best. Let's put him in positions to maximize that.
What are you thinking about backup quarterback next year?
Yeah, you know, we're going through that right now. Just a lot of evaluations in place right now, whether it's the draft or free agency. There's a couple options. We've said this before. There's no more important room than that quarterback room, so we're really mindful of who we pair in that room.
How's Mike Glennon fit into that?
You know, Mike Glennon, just to be transparent on that, you know, I've talked to Mike a lot recently. Obviously, there's a mechanism in his contract where we really can't release him until the start of the new league year. So that's kind of our plan going forward. We've been transparent with Mike, and that's how that'll play out.
What about Sanchez? Any value in him coming back?
Yeah, you know, he did a good job this year. You know, obviously, all the things that we value with him is his veteran leadership and his experiences. And again, he's a free agent. Right. Those are all evaluations that are ongoing.
Has he expressed interest in coming back?
Yes.
So Sanchez could be in the mix. The Bears could also go outside the organization. Chase Daniel is a name with his Matt Nagy connections that has been brought up a little bit. So, but I think that's a big storyline. It's who the Bears put in as a backup quarterback to Mitch Trubisky. It matters both from the standpoint of developing Mitch, but also if Mitch would ever get hurt, got to have somebody who can go in. We learned that in the Super Bowl this year with Nick Foles. You got to have a capable backup. So that'll be one of many big decisions that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy need to figure out here in the next few weeks.
Don't you just bring back Sanchez, whether he's your backup or your third string quarterback, considering the relationship he has with Trubisky?
Yeah, I think that there would be a lot of value in that. If there's mutual interest, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I also think, you know, just looking at Sanchez's playing career, you can do worse. There's certainly worse backups.
Right.
But again, you got to ask the question: if Mitch were to go down and the Bears were in a situation where they were competitive, can you trust a Mark Sanchez to keep things going? And that's kind of an unknown right now.
Compared to what? I mean, who would you bring in and feel comfortable with saying, okay, if Mitch goes down, this guy can give you a shot to win a few games, rather than Mark Sanchez?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's the prototypical backup quarterback, and basically your season, for the most part, is probably over if your starting quarterback gets hurt. Where are they standing? Don't they have an insane, like, over $65 million in cap space right now?
Yeah, and I think it's even a little bit more than that. When you factor in Mike Glennon being let go now too, it's just not issue the cap at all. That also doesn't mean that they should go out and spend like crazy. You got to be smart about it. You don't want to put yourself. Part of the reason why the Bears are in this situation with the cap room they have is because they have been smart with their contracts. They haven't spent too much. They've structured them smartly so that they can get out of the bad ones relatively easily, including Mike Glennon. And you know what? As we put the Mike Glennon year to bed, I like another thing that Ryan Pace said, and by the way, if you want to hear the whole thing, we're going to have the entire Ryan Pace press conference and Matt Nagy press conference in the Hogan Johns podcast, which has already been recorded and will be up in the same places that Sports Central is up every day on WGNRadio.com, iTunes, the Google Play. So if you want to check all that out, you can. But one of the things that Pace said a little bit later on when he was asked about just kind of reflecting on Mike Glennon's obviously disastrous year with the Bears, he said, look, we took our shot. It would have been kind of reckless to just, let's just say the Bears had just signed Glennon or just signed or just drafted Mitch by themselves. They took two shots at a position that is very, very important. One looks like it worked out. One obviously didn't work out. So that was kind of what the goal was when they took those shots. One of the two had to work, and it looks like one of them is going to. So I as bad as the Glennon era looks, I don't think Ryan Pace really cares.
And the thing, the point I've tried to make over the past year with the Glennon signing, of course it didn't work out. Of course it wasn't a great signing. But the amount of anger coming from Bears Nation towards that signing is, I shouldn't say surprising, because I get the animosity towards the quarterback position and anything related to it in this town, but it was just money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it was just money. It didn't prohibit them from signing anybody else. So the amount of anger was like more than I anticipated it being, although Glennon was horrible, and it actually worked out that he was horrible, because if he had played well, who knows if we even would have seen Mitch get on the field this season at all, which we all know he should have been on the field for as many reps as possible. So in that regard, it kind of worked out that it actually helped that he sucked so much, because it basically forced John Fox and it forced Ryan Pace to put Trubisky on the field.
Now, if you want to be negative about one aspect of it, and I was actually having a conversation with somebody here in Indianapolis last night about this, but the Bears did kind of outbid themselves for Mike Glennon. There was not another team that was going to pay him nearly that much money. And so does that make you worry about some of these negotiations going forward? Maybe. Or, you know, and I think we saw it with when Pace traded up to get Trubisky. He just had conviction on two guys, wanted to make sure that he was not in a position where he wasn't comfortable with the quarterbacks that they had. So he took his shots. And again, one worked, one didn't. The goal was to get one of the two that worked. And in the end, it doesn't hurt, as we're seeing today. $68 million in cap space or whatever it is. They got plenty of money. They got plenty of cap space. It's not a problem.
And if you are going to overpay a position, it should be the quarterback position. And I'm not defending the signing at all. It didn't work out. It was bad signing overall. I'm just saying the backlash from Bears fans, who probably will still be complaining about this contract in 5 years, and I'm not joking, because Bears fans continue to, you know, complain about past quarterbacks even to this day, even with a guy like Trubisky. All right, moving on from that, Matt Nagy. Is it Nagy or Nagy, for God's sakes? What is it?
It's Nagy. I think if you're going to pronounce it the same way his East Coast accent does, it's Nagy, but we're in Chicago.
So we're going with the Chicago accent, and it's Nagy.
That's what I'm going with.
Because I've seen,
either one's fine.
Oh, he did say that. Okay.
Yeah, Nagy. He said he doesn't really care.
So it's kind of like saying Mitch or Mitchell. Doesn't really matter.
Yeah, either one works. At least that's how I look at it. And do we still have time to play? Because I did want to bring up what Nagy had to say about Mitch Trubisky today.
Yeah.
Now that he's had an opportunity to really look at the tape from Mitchell's first season with the Bears, I just found it really interesting, some of the things that Matt Nagy saw watching that tape.
What you can see is just some of the trust in his throws. You know, he has a strong arm, so we all know that. But being able to trust it, and what happens naturally is the game slows down for you the more and more experience you get. So that's a benefit that he has going into this next year with us getting him, is that he has game experience. You know, he's not somebody that's coming from the classroom. And so just trusting every throw that he makes, you can see from where he started to where he finished, that was a big growth right there.
See, even Nagy's saying he has on-field experience.
Yeah.
Thank God Trubisky got on the field last year.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It turned out to really be a blessing in disguise. I think that they thought it was going to take longer for him to pick up everything that he needed to pick up.
Yeah.
And even at the start of training camp, you know, he was really far behind, but you could see the raw talent. He just accelerated so fast and picked things up so quickly that it allowed them, when Glennon was bad, to make the switch. And now as we look back on it, it's obviously a good thing because he got all that experience and then can now try to make a big jump in year two.
All right, two final thoughts from you from Indianapolis. One, yes or no, do they tag Kyle Fuller?
I'm leaning towards no, but I'm also leaning towards I think he will remain a Bear once he hits the open market. I think he'll end up re-signing.
Interesting. Okay, to plug away, if you have any other final thoughts from the Scouting Combine, feel free. Other than that, where can we read your stuff and your podcast? Where can we get all that?
Yeah, I would just say we got a. I just ended up recording a really long podcast with Adam John, so plenty more thoughts on anything you and I just didn't touch on here. So that'll be up shortly on WGNRadio.com, the Hogan Johns podcast. And again, if you want to hear everything that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy had to say, it's all in that podcast.
That's Adam Hoge, our WGN Radio Bears insider. He's in Indianapolis covering the Scouting Combine and all thing Bears related. Where's your go-to spot to eat? Are you a St. Elmo's guy?
Oh, do we have time for a quick story? Because this is actually great. So Ike Isaac, who is the WGN-TV cameraman, he and I made a bet way back in the OTAs when the day Connor Shaw got cut. And then remember, Mark Sanchez got hurt the same day, so they ended up bringing Connor Shaw back.
Yeah.
But in between that time period where he got cut, like when he wasn't a Bear, Ike was like really worried about the Bears were going to lose him. He was going to end up being good on some other team. And I was like, Ike, he is never going to start a game in the NFL. Never. And so we made a bet on that, a steak and dinner bet. From driving down to Indy last night, and Jared Payton texts me, and he says, "Where are you? Ike wants to pay up on his steak dinner bet. We're at St. Elmo's."
Wow!
And I was on my way down, and I hit the, you know, I like doubled my cruise control and got right there as fast as I could. And Ike paid up, and so not only does he pay up a steak dinner, but he did it at St. Elmo's. That is mad respect. What a good dude.
That's huge. Props to Ike, and congratulations on your steak. I hope you went ribeye, and more importantly, I hope you went medium rare.
One of the two, correct. I went New York strip, but okay. Did go medium rare.
That's
as
fine.
Always.
I'll allow it. Adam, enjoy Indianapolis. We're looking forward to your work at WGNRadio.com, the podcast, and we'll see you back here tomorrow, correct?
Yep, I'll be there tomorrow. See you, Kev.
All right, man. Thanks, Adam. That's Adam Hoge, WGN Radio Bears Insider. Up next, the Big Ten Tournament sneaks up on you. It's already here this week. Out in New York, we'll get the latest from Steve Greenberg on the Sun Times in 60 seconds.
WGN. WGN.
This is where WGN Sports Central lives.
It's alive!
Streaming right now with your host, Adam Hoge.
I am not Adam Hoge. I'm Kevin Powell, but you are listening to Sports Central on this Wednesday afternoon. We just chatted with Adam Hoge from Indianapolis. He's covering the Scouting Combine and the Bears for us. We go from Indianapolis to the Chicago Sun-Times, Steve Greenberg. He's covering the Big Ten Tournament. He'll be out in New York this week. Steve, appreciate you jumping on the show. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing well. First of all, let's explain this, because the tournament kind of snuck up on everyone, including myself. I've been in spring training the past 2 weeks. I get back Sunday night, and somebody had mentioned the Northwestern playing this week, and I'm like, what do you mean they're playing this week? And I'm like, that's right. It's because this is starting a week earlier than usual. Explain that and the Big Ten's process of starting it earlier and moving out to New York this weekend.
I'm not sure I have a good explanation for it other than that, you know, they're making room for the Big East tournament, which is always at the Garden next weekend, just like the Big Ten tournament traditionally is next weekend in Indy and Chicago. This is a sort of forced thing that Jim Delaney, the commissioner, pushed for, and if you believe in the notion of a big expanded footprint in the Big Ten in New York and that matters, then it makes sense. You move the tournament up to make it happen and to hit that market and all that. But it is unusual, it is awkward, and it led, frankly, to a really strange regular season with a lot of games and short periods of times, and it affected a lot of teams. You mentioned Northwestern. The Wildcats are one of them. As banged up as they are, you can't draw a straight line from a bunched regular season schedule to injuries that leave them without Vic Law now, without Jordan Nash, with Bryant McIntosh really compromised with a shoulder injury. But you could certainly surmise that the schedule contributed to their situation and the attrition that we've seen. So anyway, being in New York, I don't happen to think there's a whole lot of value to it. I certainly don't think the marriage with Rutgers is bearing all kinds of fruit. And it is a strange place to be. I don't think people in New York are going to be too jazzed about the big Iowa-Illinois game that's coming up this afternoon before people are even out of work. I mean, it'll be a ghost town in the Garden, and that wasn't part of the idea.
Well, that was my question. What are you anticipating the crowd-wise? You kind of just answered it for me. But a lot of the players are excited to be playing at Madison Square Garden. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, this is the Big Ten trying to put a footprint down on the East Coast with, you know, we saw with the expansion with Rutgers in Maryland. But it does seem awkward to me as well. You mentioned Northwestern. You had a good piece at the in the Chicago Sun-Times about their season and kind of what they have to do in this tournament. It's pretty clear, considering their body of work, that it's you got to win the whole thing, which is a stretch. But it's end of regular season tournaments. Crazy stuff has happened before. So how would you kind of characterize or describe this season for Northwestern, and what went wrong for them?
Well, they would tell you themselves, maybe not each one of them, but McIntosh has said it. He said it to me in a story that made some waves, and you know, he may even have to some extent regret it. I don't know that, but Chris Collins verified it, that these players kind of took for granted you know, how well they do this season, and didn't prepare as hard for what was going to be, you know, a vital sort of follow-up back to last year's trip to the NCAA tournament. They just didn't prepare. They didn't have the dog in them, the eye of the tiger, whatever you want to call it. And Chris Collins recognized that pretty early on in the offseason, and frankly didn't do enough about it. You know, I think he said something repeatedly. He sort of got in their ears and sat on their shoulders metaphorically and said, you know, hey, I'm not sure you guys are doing the right thing. What he probably ought to have done, and in hindsight knows he needed to do, was you know, raise hell about it and make sure it got back on the rails and didn't stay off the rails. And so, you know, Northwestern, which didn't have the kind of talent to begin with where you can just roll the ball out and let them play and they're going to beat Big Ten teams routinely, has lost a ton of close games, got just, you know, hammered early by some pretty good opponents, and has had a real reckoning, a season-long wake-up call. And at this point, you know, in my opinion, I mean, if they go tomorrow and beat Penn State, it'll be very surprising. And the notion of a more meaningful, sustained run in the Big Ten tournament is just beyond my imagination.
Well, two games today. Illinois and Iowa kick things off. Then it's Rutgers and Minnesota. Northwestern, as you heard Steve say, will play Penn State tomorrow afternoon. 5:30 on WGN Radio, by the way. Dave Bennett will have the call. 5:15 pregame. Who's a team or multiple teams? Is it Nebraska? Is it Penn State? That's kind of on the bubble of the tournament, and they need a strong showing, a couple wins maybe. Is it Penn State, Nebraska? How much do they have to show the committee to earn a bid?
A lot. More for Penn State than Nebraska, without a doubt. Penn State's got a chance to maybe win a game against Michigan and be in. And Nebraska. Did I say Penn State? If I did, I meant Nebraska. Penn State is, I think they're at least a few wins away.
Okay.
And so, you know, Michigan is in, and of course Michigan State, Purdue, Ohio State are in. And that might be it, you know. That might be it. It might be that the Huskers are the only other Big Ten team with any kind of real, you know, bubble existence going in. Penn State lost its last three regular season games, and that really, I think, cooked that team. And so NIT again for the Nittany Lions is what everybody expects.
Talking with Steve Greenberg, Chicago Sun-Times. Follow him at SL Greenberg on Twitter. Who's your pick to win the tournament, the Big Ten tournament? We can get to the big dance after that.
Yeah. I hate to be boring, but I think Michigan State. I mean, they just, first of all, they're going to have to beat Michigan in all likelihood, and that's a tough game. Michigan won in East Lansing, and that's a good Wolverines team. They're always peaking late. that's the big, you know, that's the big one for getting there. But I think it's going to be kind of a, you know, a chalky bracket, just because the Big Ten is real strong at the top and then falls off incredibly, like, you know, in as much as it ever has. So, yeah. You know, if it's Purdue or if it's Ohio State coming out of the other side of the bracket, then you got yourself a pretty good championship game, assuming the Spartans or even Michigan get there. If it's not, you know, Purdue, Ohio State, who the heck is it? Is it Penn State? You know, and now you're looking at really kind of a maybe anticlimactic conclusion to the tournament. But I'll go with the Spartans. They have by far the most talent. Purdue is clearly next. I'd love to see Spartans Boilermakers. I mean,
yeah.
You tell me another team that has a pair of 7'2" rim protectors like the Boilers have. And on top of it, they are, along with the Spartans, two of the top three or four shooting teams in the country. But from two, from three, it's rare that you have a blend of great size and great shooting. Or for the, you know, the Spartans, this talent level, but also the great execution, the great shooting. So these are the two best teams, I think.
He's Steve Greenberg, covers all sorts of sports, and you can read his stuff at the ChicagoSunTimes.com. Steve, appreciate you joining me, and are you in New York now? You'll be heading out there this weekend.
I'd like to say yes to either of those, but in fact, I am at the Blackhawks practice facility as we speak, and then heading on the weekend down to St. Louis, where I used to live for almost 20 years, to cover Loyola's
Arch Madness, baby.
Run in the Valley. And I'll be honest with you, man. I'd rather be at that one.
Yeah.
Arch Madness is a great event under any circumstances. It's you know, the league without Wichita State has fallen back a little, maybe. But the Loyola story is cool. And it's Loyola or bust for as far as the NCAA tournament in this state. So people might as well get behind it. I'm interested enough in it, and I'm going there, not New York.
Yeah, I worked at a radio station in Bloomington. I went to Illinois State, so I'm pulling for my Redbirds always. But yeah, the Loyola story is a great one, and I know they've pretty much got to win the thing to get a bid. Although some people might think that they shouldn't have to do all of that to get into the tournament, but we're wishing them luck. I'll be pulling for my Redbirds. Steve, appreciate you joining me, man. Have fun at Arch Madness.
All right, Kevin, take it easy.
Thanks a lot. That's Steve Greenberg from the Sun Times. He mentioned the Blackhawks, which is just about a perfect segue. Steve Cochran had the Coach Q show this morning. Coach Joe Quenneville joining Steve and the gang this morning. And I thought there was some interesting stuff from it where, you know, Steve asked Q about how is this locker room holding up? It's something that's new to the team. Are they still fighting? Have they given up? Is there any animosity in the locker room? And I think Q has some interesting responses to that, and I think it shows that this is a veteran club, although they haven't been playing very well. I think they're kind of holding things together pretty well. So here's Coach Joel Quenneville, your Chicago Blackhawks, on the Coach Q Show with Steve Cochran this morning on WGN.
Yeah, I had both guys. You know, they brought a lot to the team, and especially being hometown guys. Well, at the trade deadline, we've been in a different mode here this year than we've been in past years, where we're always the acquirer.
Right.
And this year, we had a couple of guys get a chance to go win championships. So good for them, and wish them nothing but the best. Both got a productive night as well last night, so good beginnings for them. And hey, wish them well.
Yeah, and it's a young career and a long one ahead for both. Who knows? They may end up back in the Indian head sweater again someday. You know, the thing about the National Hockey League, and I don't want to get political here, is I just hope at some point they change the salary cap structure so teams don't have to, you know, break up the way the Blackhawks have had to break their action up over the, you know, 10 years or so that you've been doing this with the Hawks.
Well, it's been, you know, give Stan and the organization credit for every year. Whether we're retooling, you know, during the course of the year, in the summer, at the deadline, but a lot of decisions we make a lot of times have a lot of implications with the money part of it and the business decisions, part of the hockey decisions, and then finding ways to remain competitive is, you know, it's been fun being a part of it, but it's not an easy thing to do because it's challenging. And, you know, I think our core guys that have been here for 10 years have all, you know, they've had a lot of different teammates, and it's, you know, you got to commend them and find them some continuity with their new line mates, new teammates, and making it work. So it's been, you know, this is the first year where we've been, you know, we've been in a different spot.
Right.
But, certainly, you know, we've been spoiled over the course of time here.
By the way, for those of you who only read headlines, there was some panting that went on for 18 to 24 hours about one sentence that the captain, Jonathan Toews, the best team guy I've ever seen in professional sports, said when he said, yeah, I was surprised to see Ryan Hartman go and he's going to be missed. That's a long ways from the captain is upset. The captain's gone rogue. It's just we live in a headline culture, coach, and just don't just stop at the headline. Read the story. There's no dissension in the Blackhawks dressing room.
No, I think these guys have—they've been through a lot. They've lost a lot of close buddies. They've lost some of their best friends, and you know, I think they're true pros, and finding the way to move forward is something they've adapted to, and they adapt to. You know, I can't imagine how many. When I think back, how many different guys they've had, or different line mates or different teammates. It's been, you know, it's been a constant change, and you know, that's part of pro sports and part of our business. And you're right, in the salary cap era, and when you win, definitely changes the complexion from year to year, and we've been fortunate in a lot of ways to have that success. But there, you know, there's eventually a lot of these guys are going to get, you know, they're going to get to the next level, and they're going to get compensated differently, and hence, you know, that's why we have to keep changing and moving along here, and finding new ways to, you know, new guys getting included and finding where they fit and belong, and hopefully they continue to get better.
Do you ever make $100,000 as a player?
Did I?
Yeah.
I got to that number. Yeah. Didn't get the two, though.
Were you living large at that point? Do you think, I am never going to need another dime in my life?
Well, you know what? In this business, it's a competitive business, and it's not easy to get here, and it's even tougher to stay.
So yeah, it's a great point.
It's always been like that, and you know, that's not going to change. I think you know, the salaries from years ago to our era were you know, very small, and then to our era they you know, just about you know, the 90s, late 80s, they started going to another level, and now they're you know, players get compensated comparable to more of the other sports, and you know, I think guys do pretty well.
Yeah, hockey was out of the Big Four for a while, and thankfully it's back, and the Blackhawks no small part of that. Andy Satter, the coach.
Coach, good morning. I just wanted to ask you kind of along those lines of, you know, it's hard to get there and harder to stay. One of the young guys, Nick Schmaltz, you know, you sent him down a little bit last year, and then he came back and started really coming on toward the end of the year. Has he been one of your more consistent guys throughout this year?
Schmaltz had a good year. I think that I think he's gone to a higher level than he was at last year. I think last year he was trying to get is situated here, where all of a sudden he's got some predictability being here, and then spending some time in the minors, he got some progress there. This year, I think he's got more pace and consistency to his game. Nice to see him have some production, but his deception and his speed is really high end, and it really helps our team game. And his line's dangerous, and he can be dangerous. And I think with him continue to improve on a game to game basis or year to year basis, will be what we're looking for and what he should be looking for, because he's got some high end ability and not just a decent player. Hopefully he can go to that next level and be a top player, because he has capabilities with his pace and his speed and his deception, and he's getting better defensively. So it's been you know, he's had a good year, and you know, keep getting better has got to be the mindset, and whether it's stronger and more consistent, those things will really help him get and go to that next number or level.
Yeah, and Schmaltzy is one of the better nicknames in the league.
It's a great nickname, yeah.
Yeah, it's solid. So you want him to do well. Corey Crawford update?
No news on Crow. He seems to be getting a little bit better, but until we get him back on the ice, no really new update on him.
And I'm not in the net tomorrow night. Who is?
Tomorrow we got Broobs in net tomorrow night.
Yeah. We know we had him on the show. We had him on the show. Was it yesterday?
Monday. It was Monday, yeah.
It's Monday. Mm-hmm. What a good guy. I enjoyed talking to him.
Nice kid, you know, nice, good teammate, competitive, you know, I think all the attributes you find in a goaler. And, you know, he's always been in that boat where he's trying to get that next level, where he's the guy to be, whether he's a backup or pushing the the top goalie. He's been on that 2 and 3 number for a while, and I think that I think that's what he's looking to prove, that he can be an NHL goalie at a regular time. But you gotta like the guy, good kid.
You know, I was watching the Winter Olympics, as I know you saw a good part of the Winter Olympics hockey, and it's just weird seeing goalies play the puck as far out as they did and cutting down angles almost to center ice a couple times. And the rules were different when you were playing. How much communication goes on between defensemen and goalies, and who talks more?
Well, it's more of the responsibility of the defenseman to give the goalie an idea that, you got time, you got an out. We practice, whether it's breakouts and then sometimes just shooting it in the neutral zone is not a bad play. But, the goalies, they get the talking more so about the predictability of having where the D are going to be in their outlets. And sometimes I think they anticipate what their options are when they come out of the net. I think the experience of coming out of your net with time, your options, and you got a young goalie in there. I think the better you have, or as many touches as you have, and the more you're starting to see other teams' offense and forechecking pressure, you see what your options are as well. But it's always nice to know that the D can give you some reassurance that whether you got time or no time, and I think that helps.
That's Coach Joe Quenneville, your Chicago Blackhawks, joining Steve Cochran this morning on WGN. Coach Q joining him for his weekly hit. And it started, by the way, I should have set that up a little bit better. That was Q talking about the absence now of Ryan Hartman and Tommy Wingles. Hartman, the West Dundee kid, drafted by the team in 2013, makes his debut in 15. And then he's traded yesterday, or was it 2 days ago, at the trade deadline. And Tommy Wingles, the Chicago area native as well, they both score goals in their debuts with their new team. So there you have it. You can listen to that full interview at WGNradio.com. Coach Joe Quenneville joining Steve Cochran. We go from hockey to baseball, but this is a man that definitely knows his hockey stuff. His name is Chris Cook, and you can read his stuff at ChicagoTribune.com or your paper. And Chris is out in the desert getting ready to watch some more White Sox spring training baseball. How you doing, Chris?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good. Well, since I have you here, good. That's kind of a perfect transition from to a Chris Cook interview, is going from Blackhawks hockey to this. What are your thoughts on this season? How closely have you been able to follow the Blackhawks? I know you're on the Sox beat now, but what do you make of this? It's something we haven't seen now for probably a decade, where they're going to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, I haven't followed it all that closely, although I did go to the game out here when the Blackhawks play the Coyotes, and I try to catch up with them on TV. It's remarkable, really, to me, that this team is going to miss the playoffs. I know there's a lot of transition. I think the loss of Nicholas Jarmolson on the back end was a crippling blow to the defense, and obviously it hasn't recovered, really. But just to see the drop-off in Jonathan Toews' game, and, we expected more out of Patrick Sharp, and, Duncan Keith is playing at a high level still, but maybe not really Norris level, which you need from him. It's a team that's in transition quite a bit. I didn't think it would happen this quickly, frankly. I just thought that the team is being a playoff team for several years to come. Maybe not challenged for a cup, but still put together a fine season. And here we are. Well, we're right at the start of March, and they're already out of the playoffs, basically. So it's pretty shocking to me, especially covered that team for 9 years when it was pretty much a fait accompli the last 8 of them that they were going to make the playoffs.
It's frustrating. But let's focus on baseball. Chris Cook's on the White Sox beat now for the Chicago Tribune. I was out there for a couple weeks. Got to work alongside Chris and the whole gang out there. The reason I wanted to talk to you, Chris, is because I had a really... really nice couple of conversations with Jake Berger over the past couple of weeks. And yeah. I asked Ricky Renteria on Sunday, I said, what are your early impressions? And it's kind of always awkward asking managers, 2 weeks into camp and it's just drills and stuff, the early impressions. But I just wanted to get a sense from him of what he thought about Berger. And I was kind of surprised. Like, he gave a full-blown praising stance on Berger. He was, talking about how hard the ball was coming off his bat. Like, he was really into it. And then 24 hours later, a devastating injury to Jake Berger, the ruptured tendon, done for the year. My question to you is, what was the atmosphere like, and what was some of the responses from his teammates that you guys got from the clubhouse and the team today?
Yeah, really crushing news, considering you talked to Jake Berger, and really a personable young kid. The guy's very confident in his abilities, and but they're very humble. So, I'm seeing his interactions in camp, his first camp with the White Sox, the first couple of weeks. Everybody really liked this kid. He got along with everybody. He was one of them. and all of a sudden he's down, he's out for the season. You know, I think he kind of set the tone for how Abadie was acting. He was very confident that he was going to come back. He was very positive. He said, hey, listen, I can sit around and mope, or I can take this head on and do other things in my life while I'm rehabbing. He's going to go back to school for a little bit. He said he's going to lose weight. He's going to work on his nutrition. You know, when you take that kind of attitude, people kind of follow suit. And while there was a lot of angst from his teammates, they also realized that he's young. He'll come through this. As long as he stays positive, keeps working, you know, it'll just be a hiccup in his development. But it's a significant blow to his development because this was a year that he was really going to take another step, I believe. You know, he was a first-round draft pick last year. And they had high hopes for him. So, and you saw how he's hitting the ball down here. He was hitting as hard as anybody. Him and Matt Davidson, really, the guy's really crushing the ball. So it's a significant stop here in his development. But if he stays positive, I believe he's going to come back stronger, and maybe he'll even be thinner, as he said, and in better shape and realize what he needs to do to be a major leaguer.
Yeah, you know, I posted a blog as well, and I started it by saying, you can't really sugarcoat this, you know, and I think he's saying all the right things. I think it's all genuine what he said and what Ricky said and from some of the stuff I saw you guys posting out there. But, man, this really stings and really sucks for the White Sox and White Sox fans. I mean, there's really no way to sugarcoat it where, and I don't know if it necessarily completely dampens the excitement that's coming out of Sox camp. You have probably a better sense being there now. But it's tough to sugarcoat. I know Berger did his best to kind of say, okay, maybe I can get in shape and stuff. But this really stings. And Rick Hahn, when he talked to us a couple weeks ago, Chris, he said the two main goals is the main goal really is keeping everybody healthy through the spring. And then from there on, make sure everybody's developing throughout the season. So I don't think we can. This one stings for sure.
No, it definitely stings. You know, the thing is that you at some point you either have to mope around or you have to look at the positive. But the thing of the fact is that this is a team that's not going to win a championship this year. This is a team that if they get anywhere near 500 will be successful. They're looking at even, you know, 19 or 20 as the earliest times that they can contend, and you figure that Jake Berger will be back by then. So any kind of significant blow here or a loss to the team, while it hurts in the short term, this group is all about the long term. Rick Hahn, every time he talks to me, he says, hey, I'm remaining patient. So if something like this is going to happen, this is a year for it to happen because it's not like he's got a big hole in the lineup and, you know, they have to replace him, go find a free agent or make a trade. This is a kid who is going to have his development set back a little bit, but maybe more than a little bit, right, a year. Yeah. But at some point, he's going to have enough years to get ready. He was not going to be the Sox third baseman this year. He probably wasn't going to be the Sox third baseman next year. But around 2020, they expect him to be the Sox third baseman. It gives him enough time to heal and progress. And just from listening and him talk, I think he can get there. But yeah, no, it's definitely a big blow, and it casts a bit of a dour mood over the team. But then you look at it and say, hey, we still got a lot of young kids here. The positive vibe here. Let's move on a little bit.
Maybe this will motivate Rick Hahn even more to go get Machado this offseason. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen either, but he would be a good fit there for sure.
We shall see. On the pitching side of things, Lucas Giolito set to get the start. For me, my takeaway from Giolito this spring was, he's a really smart guy, and I think he really owns his craft, and I think he really understands every little aspect of pitching, and he's really into it. He's a smart guy. What's your takeaway been from Giolito this spring?
Yeah, I think that was my first feature out here was Giolito and just kind of his awareness of his body, his awareness of his arm, his awareness of his pitches and his stuff, really mature for his age and for his experience. You like to talk pitching with the kid. I mean, and it's over my head, so it's like he's talking. I have to go back and kind of research what he's talking about. But he's very aware of arm angles. He's very aware of his off-speed pitches when he needs to use them. That's the kind of information that he's going to use early on. I think this kid's an ace of the staff. I really do. I know that everybody says Rodon, when he comes back, will be the ace. Lucas Giolito, to me, with that arm angle that he has, being he's very tall and he's able to pitch high in the zone with some good stuff, I think he's a potential ace, and I think this is the season he's going to take the next step. He won't be, you know, I don't think he'll be the ace of the staff maybe early on because you've got, you know, James Shields there, you've got Ronaldo Lopez and, you know, Gonzalez. But to me, Giolito's got good stuff. He's aware of what he's able to do, and as he learns these batters in the American League, he's going to be that much more effective. I really believe that this kid at some point is going to be ace of the White Sox staff.
Yeah, honestly, I was kind of questioning that, you know, heading into spring. I wanted to get a good sense of where he's at, see him up close, and I'm with you. I think, like, he understands the game very well. He understands the art of pitching very well, so I think he knows what he has to do to get to that ace level. So I think that's some encouraging stuff we saw from Giolito. We're talking with Chris Cook from the Chicago Tribune. He's out in the desert covering White Sox baseball. And we'll let you go in just a few minutes here, Chris. I know you guys are getting ready for first pitch. If you're comfortable with it, and I know this was very, I don't even know how to put it, but you had a feature on Mikey Duarte. I hope I'm saying his name correctly. And, I saw you post, you didn't want to post a link to it because it's, you know, sort of for me, like I'll equate it to this, and I don't know if this analogy will work, but a couple weeks ago when Commander Bauer was shot and killed in Chicago, you know, we do this whole show, and I thought I thought Roe and Anna and the newsroom did such a great job covering it, but it's also weird to say, hey, we did a great show today, guys, because is it a, you know what I mean? Like you have a job, you have a responsibility as a show to do what you need to do to cover a topic, but it's also kind of a sensitive area where you don't want to be like, okay, guys, great show. It's just more of like, shake hands, move on. And I kind of get, from this angle, I know you didn't post a link to this story about it because it's such a tragic and, man, I was tearing up reading the story you posted. If you're comfortable with it, I guess if you want to tell the story of Mikey Duarte, the White Sox prospect, if you're okay with it, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Mikey Duarte is a White Sox prospect. And I got to tell you, before I get into the story, I'm with you. I'm a journalist who... I think this is going to be a great story. Maybe I'll get on, A1, or maybe I'll get a ton of clicks. And when you first think about it, because that's what you do out here, you look for great story angles. So when, I find out that, I wasn't the only one to find out, but when we realized that Mikey Duarte's sister, who he was very close with and called her his best friend, was shot in Las Vegas in the mass shooting in Vegas. I said, well, I'd like to talk to that kid. And I actually asked a couple months ago and they said, listen, he's not in the frame of mind to talk. We'll get to him at some point if he doesn't mind, but we're going to let him play this out. I totally went with that. I said, absolutely. I don't want to make this into a sideshow for the kid.
Right.
I can't put myself in his shoes. I can't imagine what he's going through. And then the Sox gave us word that he was willing to talk. And I think it was a little cathartic for him. And, to me, sitting there, when he came out, he had a little bit of a smile, and there's just this gloom around him. And he's a young kid; he's got the world at his feet. He's got a lot of potential. He's a professional baseball player, and you can just the pain in his eyes and the pain in his voice. And talking about his sister Christiana, who he said was his best friend and always will be, to sit there and look in his eyes and have him explain what happened and what he was feeling and how crushed his parents were and still are and how their lives will never be the same. He said his parents wake up every day and it's a living nightmare. And I have a son myself who's 8 years old. And I can't imagine losing a child like that or losing a brother or a sister like that. So it was one of those things where you're sitting there and you're trying to ask the right questions, but you're trying to be careful because you have to respect how he's feeling. And I think that myself and the other beat writers that they brought out, there's only four of us, Richard Justice, Daryl Van Scowen, and Dan Segan. We were very respectful and asked the right questions and listened to what he had to say more than anything. And then it was just after we talked to him and took his hand and he let us take photos of him, which, none of us wanted to do, but in the newspaper business, if you have a story of somebody, you've got to have a photo with him. He was very gracious. And then when he was done, I think I just turned to Daryl Van Scowen at some time. They said, I don't want to transcribe this. I don't want to listen to it again. And I don't really want to write it. And not because I didn't think I could do it. It's just so painful, the look in his eyes and his voice. And then I realized that, Mikey Duarte wanted to talk about it. He certainly did want to talk about what he believes as far as gun control and the changes need to be made. So I tried to make that point in the story because that was important to him. So we went ahead and wrote it. I thought all of us did a very good job. Read all four stories. I thought us did a very excellent job. And I would encourage people to read all four of them if they can. I thought we did a great job, and I thought we were respectful. We did the right thing. And I'm glad that I wrote it, but I was just sitting in my apartment here. I'm by myself, and, I'm sitting there in Scottsdale after a long day, and it was just the emotions were coming out, and you realize that it doesn't matter that, the White Sox can't execute a good hit and run or a guy is getting lit up. It just puts everything in perspective. And I know people are passionate about it, but there are very more important things than baseball or sports. And these are human beings. And it was just very human to me And I got a little emotional about it. And I did tweet. I said something like, some stories stick with you more than others. And life changing. And I believe that's what happened with myself and Mikey Duarte. And I think some of the other beat writers are saying the same thing. And I did send out the link at some point. But in that tweet, I didn't want to kind of say, hey, this was a really life changing moment. And here's a link. Click on it, please. That wasn't my point. I just wanted to, for some reason, I needed to say, that was a life changing moment. It'll never leave me. That happens sometimes in this job. I'm glad that I was able to speak to him. I got a positive energy from him and something, and it really humbled me and realized that you need to keep those closer to you, and you need to concentrate on things other than just sports and your job, and you need to live life. So I don't want to get too deep with you there, but it really affected me, and I've had a few stories like that throughout my career. I did a piece on Stan Mikita a few years ago, same thing, talking to his wife after she revealed that he had Lewy body dementia and didn't remember who she was. So it's stories like that that really stick with somebody, and I think it changed me, and I think it changed me for the better.
Yeah, well, the Mikey Duarte story, man, it's, you did a great job. James Fegan, The Athletic, Richard, Daryl, I read them all, and I would just, and you know, I'm reading, and I think it was in yours when you mentioned that he's 16 months apart from his sister, and I pretty much damn near started bawling because me and my sister are 16 months apart. I'm like, God, I cannot even imagine. So it stuck with me. I highly, highly encourage everyone listening to read Chris's piece, read everybody's piece that did a story on Mikey Duarte. And man, you feel for that guy. I could feel the emotions reading the stories that you guys were posting and some of the stuff out there. But anyways, we can talk about this for quite a while, Chris, but running out of time here. Really appreciate you jumping on. That's Chris Cook from the Chicago Tribune, and you can read his stuff at chicagotribune.com, at Chris Cook on Twitter. Chris, I really appreciate it, man, and hopefully I can convince management to send me out to the desert one more time before spring's over.
Yeah, they roll up the streets around 10 o'clock because you're not here, you're in town, so you got to come back and get things going again. I appreciate you having me on today.
Hey, anytime, Chris. Really, really enjoyed talking to you. I'll see you soon.
You too. Bye.
All right, that's Chris Cook from your Chicago Tribune. And I'm serious. Have you read any of that stuff on Mikey Duarte, Joe? Have you had a chance to dive into any of that? His sister, he's a prospect for the White Sox, and his sister was killed in the Las Vegas mass shooting.
Yeah, it's... I don't think I can describe it any better than you did. It's chills, a real tearjerker.
You get teared up and whatnot. But that's Chris Cook covering the White Sox. On the Cubs, just a couple Cubs notes for today. John Lester was named the ace, the opening day starter. He'll be followed by Kyle Hendricks, then Yu Darvish, Jose Quintana fourth, and then Tyler Chatwood fifth. So that's a little bit of news out of Cubs camp today. Chris Bryant still sick, still under the weather, so not going to play today. And Eloy Jimenez, the White Sox top prospect, still resting a sore left knee, likely not going to go as well today. So that's the latest from the desert. And it's time we get to Buried Headlines. Joe, all my buried headlines are on my laptop, and it just died. Classic technical difficulty.
That's a buried headline right there.
We're going to wing this one, Joe.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Let's see if I can muster a couple more minutes out of my laptop here. Yeah. Okay, you handed me a couple of stuff on Matt Caesar, former Cub, current San Diego Padres. Is that correct? Is he still with the Padres? Yeah, he's with the Padres still. Joe, why don't you deliver the first buried headline of the afternoon, since this is going so well with me
making
buried headlines and my dead... You know what? My teacher, Mr. Manthe, in high school, would always tell us, basically every day as class started, he would say, Kevin, he wouldn't just single me out. He would talk to the whole classroom. But he said, technology will fail. And technology just failed me right there. I should have printed the damn stories out like a proper producer like you, Joe.
Nah, man.
Show producer. Have I congratulated you on that?
Yeah, man. You sent me a text, a very thoughtful
Joe Romano,
text.
Steve Cochran's producer now. No big deal.
Yeah, falling in some big shoes, man. But
Mike Jacobson, Matt Caesar, what do you got for a buried headline, Joe? I'll let you fire away.
Matty Caesar, as many of you remember, was the one that gifted his bat to Anthony Rizzo in the NLCS a couple years ago.
Yes.
On the way to the Cubs' first title in over 100 years. Mm-hmm. He gifted the owner of the Cubs, Tom Ricketts, this painting that looks like it's professionally done. Like, you, I would be shocked. If you handed it to me, you'd say, that's Picasso-esque. You gotta go check this out. This is a wonderful painting that I never would guess that a professional baseball player could do.
What are you saying about professional baseball players? They don't have the capacity to put out a badass painting?
Well, capacity is a big word for me, but I will say... you think if they're that good at that, how could they also be that good at painting?
I want to say he's done this in the past, hasn't he?
That's a good question.
Damn it, I wish I had that here. Okay, Matt Caesar delivering a painting all about the art this spring for the Cubs. Joe Maddon's got his paintings. He's got the flamingos out there.
Those
kind of
sweet.
A weird, yeah, that's Ernie and Ronnie calls them. And you can guess as to why he called them, name them that. Another buried headline, Tim Lincecum, the freak. Two-time NL Cy Young winner basically disappeared off the face of the earth over the past few years. He's returning, Joe. Are you excited about Lincecum rejoining he's signing with the Texas Rangers?
I won't say I'm excited, but it's interesting. That is such a White Sox name. Like if
right. if Kenny Williams was still calling the shots, they would be like, and they weren't in full rebuild mode.
Tim Lincecum
be like, hey, you know, he's a flyer. We'll put him like in the middle of the rotation, maybe a back end guy, and who knows? Maybe he can bottle that lightning once again.
Absolutely.
Unsurprisingly, John Gruden, the new Oakland Raiders head coach, rejoining his former team, saying today that he's not a big analytics guy and he likes to do it the old school way. Does that shock you at all?
Not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit. John Gruden, old school dude. Love him, though. I'm pulling for him. Are you a Gruden fan, Joe?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, my favorite player of all time is Charles Woodson. So I was actually a...
Michigan guy?
Yeah, a Bears, Raiders fan, you know, back in the day.
If it wasn't the Bears, it was going to be the Raiders.
Yeah. So gotcha.
That was your AFC team?
Exactly, okay. The AFC team.
All right. Okay, yeah. I'm with you. Well, that just about does buried headlines. This goes a lot better when Hogue's here and he has a laptop that doesn't die. But it's buried headlines. I'm Kevin Powell, filling in for Adam Hogue on Sports Central. Appreciate you listening today. And we'll end it the way we started, ripping the month of February. Just an awful month overall.
Yeah.
Valentine's Day blows. Who likes Valentine's Day?
The only thing worse is lousy smarch.
Lousy smarch? Is that what we call it?
No, that's a Simpsons joke.
Oh, gotcha. Sorry.
Stinking lousy smarch.
By the way, I'm surprised we haven't brought this up or it hasn't even become a continued theme on this show, considering Adam's love for curling, but the Simpsons called the U.S. beating Sweden in curling gold.
I wanted to play it. Adam nixed me.
Why would he nix it?
That's just the way
he is.
Right
up his alley.
No, we just didn't have time.
Oh, gotcha. Again, I'm Kevin Powell. Appreciate you listening on Sports Central. Joe, if people want to go back and listen to this podcast later, how do they do that?
They can subscribe to it on Google Play or iTunes, and you can also find it at WGNRadio.com.
All right. That's Sports Central. I'm Kevin Powell. He's Joe Romano. Adam Hogue will be back in studio tomorrow. Read his stuff as he covers the Bears and all things NFL Scouting Combine. You can read my latest blog on Jake Berger at WGNRadio.com. Appreciate you listening. Have a great day.